Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Do you want to go to rugby heaven? Let's go back to 1987 with Squidge, with Squidge. Let's go back to 87 with Squidge.
Hello and welcome to the Squidge Mic Test Retrospective Podcast, the rugby podcast where we test the mics an awful lot before recording and nothing seems to work. I am joined as ever by Will Owen.
Will Owen Mark 4, I'm Will Owen the 4th because this is our 4th attempt at recording this.
You are Grandad and
yes.
Then a few other versions from like parallel universes, is that what we're talking?
Yeah, I guess so.
Does every failed podcast attempt to create an alternate universe where that podcast went ahead, and there's an alternate podcast that exists somewhere in the Apple spheres?
I think you're right, actually. I think we have just...
An Apple sphere is actually just known as an Apple.
Yeah, we have just created 4 different timelines, right? And what I want us to do is record all 4 of those podcasts within this one, or like what we imagine would have happened. So the first one, right, we went ahead for the first 4 seconds, we thought, This is it. This is the world. This is the universe we want. The one with no technical difficulties. Because guess what? There were none in the first 4 seconds. So we thought there'll be none for the full hour and a half, right? What jokes would we have made in that universe?
Oh, I mean, we wouldn't have made any jokes about parallel universes because it just would have run smoothly.
Yes.
So we've thrown it all off immediately. We've already gone off with all of this. Everything, everywhere, all the podcasts at once bullshit.
Okay. Well, I mean, universe one.
Do you want to go to rugby heaven? Let's go back to 1987 with Squidge, with Squidge. Let's go back to 87 with Squidge.
Hello, welcome to Squidge Rugby World Cup Retrospective. Today we're going to talk about France against Zimbabwe, and it's going to be great. Will Owen's here.
I am here, and I'm having a really good time. We're just going to talk about the rugby today and nothing else.
Who's your man of the match? Mine's Pascal Ondarts, the tight head for France. I thought he'd be played.
Yeah, I've got to say, mine is exactly the same guy. I don't know who he is, but I really liked him.
And which player do you think is a cunt?
I think all of them. Goodbye.
Thank you. Please join us next time when the game will be Wales against Canada. We'll see you then for rugby.
Okay, so universe 2 now, right? So in this one, I had a faulty microphone myself. So we're gonna do a bit of that, just a tiny bit, okay?
Do you want to go to rugby heaven? Let's go back to 1987 with Squidge, with Squidge. Let's go back to 87 with Squidge.
Hello and welcome to the Squidge Rugby World Cup Retrospective Podcast, the rugby podcast that celebrates no one but Neville Cloppers. I'm joined together by, today, Will Owen. How are you? Haha, that's so relatable. Thank you, that's one of the funniest things you've ever said on this podcast. Now, I'd really like to ask you for some proper insight, of course. You've done analysis for the channel and you've written a lot for Rugby Pass and the 15, as well as Rugby World in the past. And I'd like you to perhaps say some of the most insightful things about rugby you've ever said in the past before. Wow, that really was some of your finest work. And the other thing I really want to ask from you is all about horses. Can you tell me about horses at length, please? That's so interesting. I really didn't know much about hooves before you told me that in great detail. That's unbelievable. Thank you. That's been a really fascinating episode. Who's your man of the match? Right. No. I also agree. I also think that Pascal Ungdahl is phenomenal in this game. I think he's absolutely unbelievable. And who's your dick of the day? And you, I mean, I've got to explain to you, this is a audio podcast, and therefore you can't just point at the screen and say, I don't know if you mean me or the camera itself. You're now nodding. He's now nodding and saying, mouthing the words, no me, no you. Now, the really difficult thing here is that when I say no you, I say it meaning the camera. So the dick of the day today is the camera. Please join us next week when the game will be Canada against Wales.
Okay, so that's universe number two done. So on to number three. And what happened here was that you had really muffled audio, which sounded terrible. But your mic was on. Okay, so are we ready for this?
Please.
Do you want to go to rugby heaven? Let's go back to 1987 with Squidge. With Squidge, let's go back to 87 with Squidge.
Oh, well, Squidge wrong me. Well, right perspective. And I'm joined by Willow and as your mother.
My mother?
Oh, she.
Oh, my mother, she's fine. Yeah, yeah. She's currently on holiday in Italy.
How are you?
Oh, I'm all right. Yeah, I'm currently in Nottingham.
Congratulations. Do you want a kick?
Why have you got the northern filter on? Wait, go into Zoom settings, Robbie. Go into... Hold on.
Wait, where's dialect? Where's this? Under Zoom. Because I'm on Mac. So it's different. Okay.
So it's along the bottom.
The bottoms are different.
Okay. I don't know in that case. Who's your man of the match?
It's gotta be Pascal Ungdahl. Oh, I think he's so good at rugby.
You know what? In this universe, I agree with you. Who do you think's the dick of the day?
Well, I can't escape from Malcolm Jellicoe.
Okay, yeah, he's a bit of a dick at times, I guess.
I can't escape from him. I'm trying. Hiding in maze. Can't get away from him.
I would say that my dick of the day, come to think of it, is probably you if you didn't have that accent. Because I'm really grateful that you do have that accent. I think that in another universe where you don't have that accent, I would say that you would be a dick. And I'm really glad that you now do.
So please join us next time when the game is Canada 9, Wales 4.
Yeah, there we go. That's that universe over and done with. So we're back in timeline number 4. Now, where everything is running very smoothly and nobody has a very strange voice box inserted into them 3 seconds before we start recording.
Wait, no. Was I supposed to be on recording?
Yes.
Shit. Okay, thank you for joining us. As we've just mentioned, the game today is France's 70-12 win over Zimbabwe. Which
it's nice that we distracted ourselves from that.
I think so. I had a mass breakdown reading the score out last week on the episode of Adam.
Yeah, you did.
Realizing just what I think it just clicked for me what we're doing.
Yeah, yeah.
How was your experience of coming to terms with covering this game?
You know what? I quite enjoyed it, but probably aided by our simultaneous, mainly you having a breakdown last week. I think most things in my life are a lot easier to come to terms with if I've already seen you have a breakdown over it.
Yeah,
hence why I came
I have
to work
quite
with
often.
You.
Yeah.
That's why you employed me, man.
Very often.
Yeah. It's why I love editing this podcast.
Yeah, I mean, it's most of the stuff you cut out is me crying.
Yeah.
Which is the same if you were to make any documentary on my life.
It's also the stuff I leave in. You're permanently crying. You're actually crying right now.
Cry pretty often. Not always, but pretty often.
Yeah.
So, yeah, so I am currently in Worcester for the Premier 15's final, which is tomorrow as we record this. And I was trying to fit in time to watch this game. whilst on the journey over, so we could record it once I arrived. I'm currently recording in the hotel, having arrived here. And I ended up watching most of this game during the kind of layover in Birmingham New Street.
Christ, I'm so sorry that you've been to Birmingham
so
today.
I watched it in the waiting section of platform 9B in Birmingham New Street.
So I take it you didn't enjoy it.
There's chances are someone is going to listen to this whilst at Birmingham New Street and will lose their mind.
It's possible.
I've had that happen before. What an experience.
You've had it happen before where you've listened to a podcast that mentions Platform 9B at Birmingham New Street specifically, and you're at Platform 9B at Birmingham New Street?
It's not an interesting story.
Okay.
So don't prompt me into telling it.
Okay.
I once listened to a podcast talking about, I've had it happen both with trains and a pub, where I've been listening to a podcast that mentioned a pub in Nottingham that I then walked by.
It's pretty good.
And the podcast wasn't Nottingham based.
Because I once listened to a podcast where it was an interview with Jason Williamson from the Sleaford Mods, and he mentioned the Nottingham Mail Centre while I was working there. But at the end of the day, I was listening to a lot of podcasts while I was working there. If any of them mentioned it, it was going to be the one where they interviewed Sleaford Mods, wasn't it? So, yeah.
Or the post-retrospective podcast.
Yeah, I don't listen to
when
that.
When they look over the post from 1987.
Yeah,
no.
That would be a shit podcast. Looking over anything 1987 is a shit podcast, in fairness.
They should do a podcast where they look over what the Steven Spielberg film The Post would be like if they'd made it in different years.
That's a good idea. So maybe we'll do that when we run out of World Cups.
Like, you know, in his full pomp of, like, off the back of E.T. and so on, he went and made a film about events that hadn't happened yet.
That would be smart. That would be very forward-thinking. Because, look, I think a lot of the best movies are about things that haven't happened yet.
Mm.
And I'm not just talking you're Back to the Future. I'm talking, like, Harry Potter hasn't all happened yet. I know that's a book. The Godfather hasn't happened yet.
It has, actually.
Oh, shit.
But King Kong? That's a whole other thing. King Kong is due to happen on Thursday, I think, actually.
There we go. Okay.
So, yeah. Spielberg, the year of this World Cup, released Empire of the Sun, which is, of course, the favourite film of...
The band Empire of the Sun, with the stupid hats?
That would make sense. Alan Wynne-Jones.
Oh, is it?
It's Alan Wynne-Jones' favourite film, Empire of the Sun,
cool.
By Steven Spielberg. So, there you go. There's a little bit of trivia.
Never knew
for
that.
You.
That's cool.
Yeah. And trust Alan Wynne-Jones to be about the only rugby player who has a... interesting favourite film.
Yeah, what do you imagine most rugby players like are into film-wise? You'll know this.
I was flicking through the new Rugby World this morning, and there is a, you know, they have the thing sometimes at the side where it says, like, top three films, you know, positions and whatever.
Okay.
Like foods, you know, whether that's players these. And it's almost always,
positions.
Like, Fast and Furious, which generically.
Yeah.
And they clearly don't mean the first one, because the first one is kind of... It's such a weird thing to look at that, because the first one is like a very straight drama about street racing. And by episode 9, or, you know, the 9th film, they're crazy, wacky cartoon adventures where they're going into space. And
it does make sense.
Different
it does franchise. Add up that it would be Fast and Furious and that sort of...
Yeah, it's that
car
sort of,
action.
Yeah. And then maybe there'll be like... Someone will be like, bloody Godfather in the best film ever made.
Yeah, cool. Yeah.
And there'll probably be some player probably playing for like... Bloody, it was a rubbish club.
Aurillac.
No, not there. There'll probably somebody will be like bloody Citizen Kane, but it's the best movie.
Yeah.
No, is it?
Or Batman Begins. I bet at least one rugby player likes Batman Begins.
So I can tell you that Keegan Ferreira of the Blue Revs and also India.
Okay.
Who is the Indian player playing at the highest level in rugby.
Okay.
Who they interview in this. His three favourite films are Fast and Furious, John Wick, and The Notebook.
Okay, sure.
And that's about standard. That's about
standard. Yeah. That feels like somebody is just taking a very accurate punt at what films rugby players like.
Yeah. See, here's the thing. They interview Michele Lamoureux in here. Don't ask him. Don't ask him
what
his favourite films are.
I bet Michele Lamoureux would be into good films.
Like Cinema Paradiso. You know, it's bloody Italian, isn't it?
Yeah.
Know, probably loves that. Probably
likes all Italian things.
He was once a kid with curly hair, you know?
It's true.
He's probably into it. He's probably into it. Well, finally a film podcast again. It's been so long.
Yeah, no, it's nice. It's nice. I remember once when, this was probably getting on 6 or 7 years ago now, but you were looking at something that was profiling All Blacks, and you asked me to guess who they each said is, you name, tell me which All Black it is, and ask me to guess who they each said was like their favourite music artist. And like four of them were Drake, and I just guessed Drake first every time. And like basically all Blacks love Drake, and Kanye is the other one, but Kanye's great, so.
I'd have thought it'd be Chris Brown.
Oh, Chris Brown's another one. He's a prick, isn't he?
I think the history of the All Blacks.
I think Aaron Smith's favourites were Chris Brown and Drake, which adds up.
Okay. Yeah. Make what you will of that.
Yeah.
He's going to be grooming Millie Bobby Brown in an airport bathroom.
He's a changed man now. He's into Seinfeld instead of Chris Brown.
And he seems like such a bizarrely lovely man, Aaron Smith.
Yeah,
I don't mean to rag on him.
He's had a transformation, I believe.
Yeah, very silly. Yeah. For some reason, they asked David Nineashvili about his top three Georgian wingers, and he is one of them.
Good. Back yourself, brother.
Yeah, I'm into that. Really into that. Doesn't seem to be any more favourite films of rugby players in this month's Rugby World. Might have to look for an older one to find out that Marcus Smith really, really loves Rashomon. So... Oh, what was I talking about? Bloody watching this game. I watched this game in Birmingham New Street. Right?
Oh, gosh, you did.
Because I was trying to watch it on the train to Birmingham New Street and the Wi-Fi wasn't good enough. Mm-hmm. So I watched it in Birmingham New Street, sat on a little bench.
Yeah.
And as such, because of that, I don't have any notes on this game.
Oh, you don't?
So for the first time, I am going into an episode entirely blind and reliant on you.
Wow.
I have no notes written down for this match whatsoever.
Well,
I barely remember it, and I watched it a few hours ago.
I've got 3 pages worth of notes, so I can pick and choose my favourite moments now, and you will not remember. That's great. I also know, we've already done the bit on parallel universes. I've also just noticed that was the thing you were trying to tell me at the very start of when we first started recording, and we are now 17 minutes in, and you've finally gotten to say it.
Yeah, so I've got absolutely no memory of what's going on in this game. And I've got like vague like trace flash memories of what happened.
Yeah, yeah.
This is the most flying by the seat of my pants I've been. Even more so than the episode where I hadn't watched the game.
Yeah, that's pretty exceptional stuff. Did you enjoy it at least?
Sure, yeah. I mean, no, but sure. I did wonder, like, when a lady came and sat next to me and she could see I was watching some really shit rugby on an iPad, in, like, 320p, what was her take? What was she thinking?
Yeah, I wonder if she was analysing it much as well. I actually once had it... So, during the 2011 World Cup series, we watched the third place playoff, Wales-Australia, and we recorded that with Josh Gardner. So I was watching that on a train. And there was sort of the cleaning lady walked past and just stared at my laptop, like, very, like, obviously, clearly wanting me to notice that she was looking at it. And I kind of turned around and was like, oh, yeah. And she's like, what are you watching? And she's like, oh, it's just rugby. And then she's like, oh, that's cool, I'm into rugby. And I was like, oh, okay, that's cool. You know, we're both into rugby. And then I was like, shit, I've come in too deep here. I have to now worm my way out of the fact that I'm watching rugby from 2011. And better yet, is the third place playoff. And then I just kind of said that, I'm just watching back an old rugby match for something. Because I couldn't think of something. I just had to say for something, be as vague as possible. And I said, what are you watching? I was like, Wales against Australia. Thankfully, did not ask what year.
Yeah, it didn't go.
So I got away with it. I reckon she must have noticed it was an old
game. Do you think she just had a moment she went like, Curtly Beale? she didn't want to trigger it. She knew what was coming.
Sure, sure. Yeah, that was one of the more awkward public exchanges this podcast has forced me to have. And probably one of the only public exchanges it's forced me to have. But yeah, that's my
equivalent.
Every
episode of public exchange has forced you to have.
Yeah, I guess so. But yes, so you don't have notes. I do have notes. But do you have, for instance, I don't know, the teams?
Yes. So,
we can look into
France
them.
Make a kind of, they chop and change a bit. It's kind of a half-strength team because they're playing this game on a Tuesday. And France were due to play in the quarterfinal against Fiji on the Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
They'd already qualified. Fiji had already qualified. I think France just needs to, like, not lose by 80 points or something. And
sure.
To play Fiji on the Sunday.
And they knew how tired Zimbabwe would be going into this game. I think it's probably not unfair. Yeah, exactly. That they struggled to get past Romania, who obviously we know that was a good Romania side, but that was at the start when they were all fresh and so on. Now Zimbabwe are coming off a tough tournament, having been battered by Scotland. I think they knew that, you know, they could probably coast through this game.
And as you say, France put 50 on Romania, who were, you know, beat Zimbabwe by a point.
Yeah.
So it was a very tight pool on the whole. But
sure,
there was a big difference between France and Scotland and Zimbabwe and Romania.
Yeah. So most notable person to be subbed out is Serge Blanco. Doesn't play at all.
Mm-hmm.
And they leave on the bench Guy Laporte, Philippe Seller and Pierre Babezier, two of whom do get on the field, which we will come on to later on. So they have some experience left on the bench, but that's probably their four most experienced backs, certainly, if not players that they've rotated out of their team.
Yes, so in at fullback comes Dider Camberbero, Baby Bell. So yeah, Baby Bell at fullback.
Yeah,
who interesting? Well, no, he doesn't seem to me like an interesting guy so much as he's got an interesting kind of. When you look back at the history of rugby in general, as well as the Rugby World Cup, and especially French rugby, he comes up surprisingly often for a player who wasn't that notable.
So I recognise his name, but didn't know where from. For what
he won 36 caps for France from 1982 to the 1991 World Cup, where he finished his career.
Mm-hmm.
He then, in this game that we mention, breaks Gavin Hastings' record from 1 week earlier.
No, it was from 2 hours earlier.
No, you're right, yeah. Breaks Gavin Hastings' two-hour record for most points scored in the test match by anyone.
Yeah.
This stood as a world record until Simon Culhane in the 95 World Cup against Japan.
Okay, wow.
And it
that's a long time.
As a French national record.
Okay.
This scores 30 points in this game. No one's ever scored more points for France. And so he then, right, and this is the really interesting thing, in this game, broke the world record for most number of successful conversions in 9, right?
Okay.
Well, no, sorry, he tied the world record.
Right.
But this is where it gets really interesting, right? Mm-hmm. Do you want to know who he tied the record with?
Yes, I do.
Guy Camberbero, his father.
No! That's mental. Because his dad would have been boasting about that for years. And also what I love is he misses the last two conversions of the game.
Yeah.
So he could have beaten it. And he would have lost so much sleep over it that night that he didn't beat the record.
So imagine that. Imagine having those two kicks to beat your dad holds the world record, right, for what I think like 40 years he held the world record.
And that's an insane world record to hold.
Yeah. I mean, so, yeah, his dad broke that world record from 1966.
Right.
So 21 years.
Blimey.
21 years he had that world record. And then the only person that ties it, and no one's kicked more plays a kick more conversions for every team since, but no one's kicked as many for France in one game. And the person that ties it is your son, who then misses his last two kicks.
That's really funny. I had no idea that his dad had played for France or anything, let alone this. Because it kind of comes out of nowhere that he creeps up and eventually beats that record, doesn't it? Because, I mean, to kind of get into it, like in the first half he isn't too prominent, and in the second he really streaks away.
His dad and his nephew and his uncle, rather, Guy and Lillian Camberbero, were kind of the Garbizis of their time, as they were the French halfback partnership in the 60s.
His dad and his nephew?
His dad and his uncle.
Okay.
I slipped up there and did correct myself. I did correct myself.
Okay, sorry.
But it would have been a wild thing to witness.
His dad was a late bloomer.
Yeah, or is a really talented baby.
Yeah, really talented fetus.
The Isaac Boss baby, the scrum half.
Yeah. Nice. Yeah, Boss Baby film.
Pretty good.
Yeah, it was.
So, yeah, his dad and his dad's brother, his uncle, played as halfbacks for France. His dad was a fly half. His uncle was the scrum half.
Okay.
And then he went on to be, a fullback, goal-kicking fullback, who also played fly half. He also won caps at 10. For France. He then also broke the world record 3 years after this in 1990 for most successful drop goals in a single match.
Oh, wow.
3, right? Which is a record that would be broken 9 years later by Yanni De Beer.
Of course. Of course. But, hey, he's done very well to contain 2 out of the 4 ways of scoring in rugby's records, at least for France.
Yeah. So those are the moments that are interesting in rugby history. Just, do you want an interesting anecdote about this guy, just because he won't come up again?
Actually, you know what?
Like 91, but they'll be a long way away.
I want this more than I wanted the one about the rugby.
So, in 1984, right?
Okay.
France were playing in the FIRA Championship,
mm-hmm.
right?
The FIRAs, yeah.
Yep. Which was a cup for European, like, continental European teams.
Okay.
Before Italy joined the Six Nations, it all kind of fell apart. Became,
right,
like,
yeah,
Six Nations
sure.
and so on, right? However, because Camberbero was a member of the French military, right, he was not allowed into Poland to play against Poland alongside Henry Sands, who was a centre for France at the time, because they were considered security risks.
Wow!
Because the Polish government were worried that they were being sent with the rugby team, basically on an assassination mission?
No! Like, as an inside job?
Yeah. Like, they were worried. They were just like, oh, you know, we've got a member of the rugby team who is a soldier. We're going to send them on a secret mission now they can get into Poland.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Like, look, Didier, you're there in the backfield. No one's looking at you. Everyone's looking at the defensive line. Look, somebody else will drop there with you. So if they kick it, they'll cover it, right? Just sneak off down the tunnel. Why don't you? Just sneak off. No one will see you get off the field. And then get out of the stadium and... Wait, who was he trying to kill?
Just, like, the...
Just Poland.
The Premier of Poland, yeah.
And kill that fucking Premier of Poland! Yeah.
I mean, it's... I honestly think it'd be quite... we should add that into the spy story about Christian Radicani.
It's true. It's true. Maybe those two and...
You've got another Cold War thriller element.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Maybe those two and Norrie... Thingamajig were all friends. I hope they were all friends.
I hope they were all friends. I hope they were really close.
Look, it's one of the great rugby values is invading Poland, is it not?
I completely agree. Friendship, unity, tying your
sportsmanship, yeah.
Having a beer together, sportsmanship, invading Poland.
Yeah, that's a lot of them, man. That's a load of boxes ticked, and the RFU no. would love you.
Rugby's just different.
It's so different.
Other sports, you don't go and invade Poland.
No, you don't. Like, look, I have played a tiny bit of five-a-side football before, right?
Sure.
Never invaded Poland.
No. No. During that time, you never invade... When you're doing, like, cricket in PE, you never invade Poland, do you?
Never. I've actually complained to the teachers about that before. It didn't end well.
Yeah, I mean,
teacher
I had
was Polish.
Problem doing rounders. Like, I was doing rounders and I went off to invade Poland. They're like, this isn't rugby
okay.
anymore, boys. You can't use your
That was last half term.
You can't invade Poland.
Yeah, it's annoying when that happens, isn't it? When
yeah.
Just...
yeah. Anything else in the French team?
Eric Bonneval comes in for all of about half an hour.
Yeah.
Having previously injured his left knee. One of France's marquee players, I think it's safe to say. Really famous French three-quarter back. Brilliant player. Unfortunately, we just didn't get to see much of him.
And of course, goes on to have a son, Hugo Bonneval.
Yeah, and Arthur Bonneval as well. Both.
And Arthur Bonneval, who's still playing.
Yeah.
Hugo Bonneval, of course, best remembered by me for the time Thomas Castagnier once said, if you want someone to show you the the top gears in your car, then you should go to him and ask him. Because what he meant was, you know, he's a player who plays in like top gear and he's really
fast.
Yeah.
But what he implied is he's a qualified mechanic.
He's an excellent mechanic. Yeah. And that's always how I thought of him after that moment. What if Maxime Machinot could change your oils?
Yeah. Hugo Bonneval has a degree in engineering. Who knew?
Rodolphe Maudin, who of course we had the confusion about whether it was his first or second cap,
yeah.
He plays.
Yeah.
Of course, he was a PE teacher, so on a similar note, probably all the time telling students off for going invading Poland.
Yeah. Frank Mesnel finally got his wish after playing like a prick in the previous game on the wing. He gets moved to 10. Yeah.
And Patrice Esteve comes in on the wing, but I like to call him Patrice Steve.
That is a phenomenal reference. Hey, Steve. If anybody gets that.
Unlucky Gen Z. He was nicknamed TGV, and I've got no idea why.
That's so good. What, he was named what?
TGV.
Is what they call him.
I don't know why. There's no explanation on his Wikipedia page.
Maybe it stands for the Great Van.
Values.
Oh, no.
Values. Values.
I think it's the Great Van. Poland. Anyway.
There's a van peeping outside my window. If you can hear that, there's kind of a van peeping outside the window of the hotel, and it's probably that one.
Should we look at Zimbabwe?
So, yeah, let's look at Zimbabwe. And I mean, they're just shit, aren't they?
So it's the same team that's been playing.
Yeah, it's pretty much before, the same team.
Except they bring back Richard Simba, who is visibly still injured.
He is clearly not fit to play.
He spends the whole game holding his shoulder.
There's one point where he goes in to make a tackle where he just tries to charge someone with the shoulder that's still working because he's got his hand on the other shoulder.
He has to, like, tuck his head in so he can get his shoulder ready.
Like, he goes to shoulder charge someone because he's injured the other shoulder. Yeah. He can't tackle.
And, like, when the teams flashed up, I saw, oh, Simba's back. He's made it.
Yeah.
That's great. I'm so excited to see him play again. And he was just half of Simba was playing. It was, oh, man. Yeah, Simba minus shoulder.
The Black Diamond, as he's known.
Mm, brilliant player, Simba. And yeah, you know what? Did well with one shoulder, but...
And, look, can we move on to a general... Oh, the other important thing about this Zimbabwe team is Neville Klopper finally gets off the bench. Get to see Neville Klopper.
I dedicated such a big portion of my page to it's Neville Klopper's time.
It's Neville Klopper's time.
He does nothing.
This is his one cap. His only cap for Zimbabwe. He finally gets off the bench for his only cap, Neville Kloppers.
I didn't see him do anything in this game.
No.
I did hear the commentator say, oh yeah, Neville Kloppers is on the pitch though, and I got to hear his name said by Grant Nisbet.
I think at one point he takes an offload, then drops it in contact. Okay.
Hey, he was playing in the World Cup.
It was Neville Kloppers, yeah.
Yeah.
I did go on Kloppers Watch, which starts on BBC Two on Sunday.
Oh, Neville Kloppers though, like, he only wins one cap and he doesn't do much, but he's already knocking on the door for our team at the tournament.
Oh yeah, absolutely. When we come to do the tournament draft, Neville Kloppers is going to be in high demand.
He absolutely is. So, look, I don't want to delay us getting to the kickoff too much, but there's some fun things happen beforehand. So we get to witness the coin toss is one thing, and then... After that, we get to witness the commentators debating what happened in the coin toss. But nothing interesting really happens there. We see the teams, and then France and Zimbabwe both run out onto the pitch. Did you get to witness France running out onto the pitch?
Yeah, I did. But I also didn't have sound at this point because I hadn't worked out. It was only coming through one earphone rather than not working.
I see.
But so, I did eventually get there.
Yeah. So you might have noticed that, and again, on the video, this is about 3 minutes and 15 seconds in. As France are running out, there is somebody in kind of the side of the tunnel who is constantly slapping France on the back with a kind of plushy toy. Did you notice this?
I sort of noticed. I didn't notice the plushy toy. I noticed someone slapping them.
Somebody is slapping them with a plushy toy. And look, if you maybe check it now, you will notice this. But do you want to know what said plushy toy was?
Please.
So they were being slapped on the back repeatedly, every France player that ran past, with a certain Monsieur Le Drop, a.k.a. Mr. Drop, as he was known in
the UK. I'm sorry. I was watching Monsieur Le Drop slap a condom in Birmingham New Street.
Yes, and more to hitting condoms later.
I don't want to hold you back from your plans after the podcast.
Shut the fuck up, man. I just meant Pete Colbuck punches him in the face. Anyway, Monsieur Le Drop, there's a little plushie of him, is being used to attack these French players from the sideline.
You say that like I know who Monsieur Le Drop is.
So I'm about to explain to you who Miss Universe...
just assuming we all know about Monsieur Latrop. Yeah, okay, we all grew up watching the Monsieur Latrop cartoons on Sunday morning.
Anyway, we get to the kickoff. No. So, Monsieur Latrop, aka he was known as Mr. Drop in the UK, is the official mascot of the 1987 Rugby World Cup.
No!
Yeah? So, I have sent to me here by the lovely friend of the podcast, Mr. Jamie Wall. He sent me the...
oh my god!
Yeah, that's Monsieur Latrop!
Why haven't we covered Mr. Latrop in...
So I wanted to wait for the right moment to do it. So Jamie Wall has sent me from Keith Quinn's book about the 1987 Rugby World Cup, the synopsis, the introduction to the character of Monsieur Latrop. Are you ready for this, Robbie? I need your full attention.
I'm very ready.
So, Monsieur Latrop was the official mascot of the 1987 Rugby World Cup. He was a fun symbol in the game for only a short time. His origins are vague, possibly only an abnormal woman's fertile mind.
I'm sorry, like the Joker, his origins are vague.
Look, they never gave a Monsieur Latrop origin story.
I want a really gritty reboot of Monsieur Latrop with Joaquin Phoenix.
Look, this podcast can write it into the canon eventually. While he was popular in New Zealand and Australia, Monsieur Latrop disappeared before the 1991 event in the UK and France. Which is a real shame, considering he has two names, one for France and one for the UK. None for New Zealand and Australia.
Monsieur
Latrop. Yeah, I think they should. So it was known that rugby officialdom before the first World Cup disliked his image intensely.
Who did?
Rugby officialdom. Rugby generally thought he was ugly.
They love wanking off pigeons, but yeah. They hate Monsieur Latrop.
Yeah, they dislike his image.
Though, they're not wrong, right? Can we try and describe Monsieur Latrop?
So,
because it's like if Humpty Dumpty
was an American football.
Well, that's the one thing, right? It's a real pet peeve of mine is when people say, "Oh, it's a rugby ball." And they show an American football.
It's very clearly an American football. Beefy arms.
And a bizarre mouth.
Yeah, yeah. And like very wide eyes.
Like they've drawn on like a Mr. Men style smile. Mm-hmm. And then they've also put a second mouth underneath. So he's kind of got two mouths next to each other, on top of each other.
And he is wearing rugby boots with six studs in them.
Mm.
So that's Monsieur Latrop. So... to carry on with, before the England-Scotland game at Twickenham in February 1987, he, in inverted commas, was not permitted to run onto the hallowed playing turf. I wonder why. Was it because he's fictional?
So, a plushie of Monsieur Latrop went on eBay a few years ago for £79.
Oh, man. If only we could have beaten him to it.
But there's also an article on the Telegraph on the history of the story of Monsieur Latrop, written by James Stafford.
Right, I'm going to come on to that.
Okay.
So the next part on this is
He was not ahead of myself.
Yeah, that's okay. Look, I love your enthusiasm on this.
I'm obsessed with Monsieur Latrop.
I love the fact we're never going
to
get on.
How
this
are we
game?
On to like episode 19 of this, and we haven't talked about Monsieur Latrop before this?
So, he was not permitted to run onto the hallowed playing turf. Thus, a promotional chance for the upcoming tournament had been lost. Oh no, no one knows about the Rugby World Cup, because this fucking monster can't get onto the field. However, his presence at each of the games in New Zealand and Australia was popular.
Great.
Which is why it's taken us 19 episodes to see him.
And it's why about 200 people turning up to each game. Yeah. They'll want to see Monsieur Latrop. Also, sometimes he seems to have a moustache and sometimes he doesn't.
Oh, I've not seen him with a moustache yet, but...
Well, there's like a couple of photos of him where he seems to have a moustache.
So, the next part is what you were just
about. Oh my god.
What?
Sorry. You can buy... There are Monsieur Latrops on eBay right now.
Should we get one?
It's a plastic Monsieur Latrop.
I'll take it. Look, we'll deal with this after the podcast. We'll order a Monsieur Latrop. But, so, yes.
Sorry, but I think we need...
We certainly do, yeah.
You can get a Monsieur Latrop keyring?
Oh, my God.
Man.
It's amazing this is all still available.
eBay is a source of wonder, isn't it?
Robbie, I need your attention for this next bit.
Oh, sorry, 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 sorry.
Writing in 2015, James Stafford, editor of the East Terrace, said that while the first Rugby World Cup was the biggest shot in the arm for rugby in over a century, Mr. Drop vanished as quickly as he had materialised. A sinister version of what happened to him is that in a fit of rage for the forces of professionalism that he had unleashed, key figures from the British Home Unions had him assassinated and dumped his body in a place rarely visited. Behind the Scottish Rugby Trophy cabinet in Murrayfield is a popular rumour.
Nice.
And then it ends with R.I.P. Monsieur Le Drop. So it is in the canon that Monsieur Le Drop is dead. But so I actually, a month or two ago, had a conversation with James Stafford about this.
Oh, right, okay.
Yeah, because
I'm going to suggest, right, what if the Polish officials had it wrong and Didier Cambero was actually going to Poland to assassinate Monsieur Le Drop?
We need to launch a full investigation into what happened to Monsieur Le Drop.
How have we not covered Monsieur Le Drop by now?
As I say, man, I want us to wait for the right moment. So, I messaged James Stafford. As I said, it's James Stafford, really lovely bloke, right? So he's been in touch with both of us before. He was very kind to send us a couple of his books. There's the Illustrated Rugby, Welsh Rugby History one, which was really great. And his stuff's really good. Yeah. And, you know, you should check it out.
Well worth looking up. Yeah.
And say, lovely bloke. And so I said to him that a friend of the podcast pointed me in the direction of your words on Mr. Drop, the mascot from 1987 World Cup. And he said, that's amazing. I'd forgotten about that. The detail about the RFU refusing to allow him to appear at Twickenham needs to go in my English book, is what he said. So he was the RFU. Wouldn't have him come on the field at Twickenham. It was the RFU's fault. It's not very rugby
Did
values,
he
is it?
Rugby values,
right?
Did Monsieur the Drop oppose rugby values?
He must have done.
Did he not want to invade Poland?
Yeah, and he said, right. Mm-hmm. And I don't remember him saying this to me, but I've just clocked this. I also just realised I own one of the key rings of him that seemed to be listed at £79.
Oh,
it's come full circle. And he said, let me know if you need any more information.
On
Monsieur Le Drop.
I'm very delighted we've got a Monsieur Le Drop correspondent.
We have an expert that we can call upon. Yeah.
I think we need to dig into this before the end of the series. I am now obsessed with Monsieur Le Drop.
We need
to... And also,
to,
it kind of...
At some point, do a bonus episode about Monsieur Le Drop, I think.
It kind of explains why they've never really tried Rugby World Cup mascots since.
Yeah.
Right? They didn't try... The Next tried them in 2019 when Japan had the two mascots, who are now just the Japanese Rugby Union official mascots.
Terrifying.
Terrifying, horrifying creatures.
That would beat Monsieur Le Drop in a fight, unfortunately.
They probably killed Monsieur Le Drop.
Yeah. Wait a minute. What if those two Japanese mascots are Didier Karambero-Bero and Christian Raducanu? In disguise.
Suits. I think they're very Japanese, to be honest. I just think they're members of the Yakuza.
Look, I just wanted to throw it out there, because what if I was right?
So, I also love the one comment on the Mr. Drop thread on Reddit, right, is, I remember that thing, 80s was a great time to be a kid, where someone would delete an account.
Entirely fair, probably, I don't know, I wasn't alive.
I think, you know, the Olympics obviously... big on mascots. Football World Cup's done a lot of mascots.
Mm-hmm.
Rugby's always been quite light on mascots, right? Like, a lot of teams have mascots.
But not to the scale of Mr. Drop.
The only mascot that's ever really caught anyone's imagination is Haguado, the Haguara's mascot. He's the only mascot that's really, like, taken off, I think.
Yeah.
To a lesser degree, I think Ozzy the Osprey has actually broken through a bit more than a lot of others.
Leo the Lion at Leinster, but he's a little bit...
Leo the Lion at Leinster is a... He's
sketchy.
A pervert.
Yeah.
He is. I've mentioned this before on the podcast, I'm sure.
Mm-hmm.
When I went to watch Leinster play a few seasons ago at the RDS, he would just go and sit on young girls' laps and, like,
touch
them in ways that made me really uncomfortable, made them
very
uncomfortable.
Strange.
I spoke to a couple of Leinster fans while I was out there, made them all very uncomfortable.
Yeah.
So, no.
Mr. Drop would never.
No. But, like, I can't think of any Premiership club's mascots off the top of my head. You know, like, Leicester Tigers have a tiger, or Sarri the camel, I guess. It's not quite the same.
And
I really remember being a kid and us going to see the EDF Energy Cup semi-finals, which were back-to-back.
Yeah, at the Ricoh Arena in Coventry, where I went for the first time since then on Saturday, which was quite nice.
Oh.
Yeah. Carry on.
And I also went the previous year to see it in Cardiff.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
When the Ospreys beat Saracens 30 points to 3.
Amazing.
Which is a fun scoreline yes. for a Welsh team to beat an English team by.
Definitely.
And I remember them bringing out a mascot for those games called Eddie, like Eddie Energy. And he looked really timid. And he was the mascot of the EDF Energy Cup. And he was a kind of so like cringy. Weird purple blob. And I remember the tallow going like, this is Eddie. He loves to show energy and show lots of energy all around. And he looked really sad. And I've always remembered him because I felt really sorry for Eddie. Because he looked like a really shy, timid child. But he apparently loved energy and loved to dance.
He and was just low on
he
it.
He didn't give that demeanor at all. He looked like a poor, depressed child and I related to him.
I do think that there is a gap in the market for mascots to really tap into that energy or yeah. lack thereof.
And like the Japanese ones were huge in Japan. People loved them.
Oh,
they
yeah,
really
yeah.
worked.
Yeah.
And they haven't done any for France. Like the French World Cup doesn't have mascots. It's got bloody Antoine Dupont.
All I'm saying, the World Cup's in France next year. Why yeah. not have maybe a descendant of a mascot with Monsieur in his title? Obviously, it can't be the man himself because he is now dead. But
Le Chien de Drop.
Something like that. Yeah. But
Le Garçon de Drop.
It obviously
the dog.
Yeah.
Le Fil de Drop. I'm going to be great speaking French.
It leaves a sour taste in my mind because after reading the thing about the RFU refusing on the pitch and so on, I can't help but think he was murdered. Monsieur Le Drop.
Yeah,
I think he was murdered. Monsieur Le Drop was fucking murdered! I'm very sad about it.
Murder, murder, murder. The other thing, right?
Yeah.
Somewhere. The one mascot that we didn't touch on, of course, is Ruckley.
Do we have to?
We don't have to. But I imagine Ruckley would have bullied Monsieur Le Drop in school.
Ruckley's a prick. Yeah, of course he would.
Ruckley's
of course
a prick.
He would have. Ruckley's like that insecure kid who's quite big, so everyone thinks he's hard, but like
Ruckley is James Haskell.
Yeah. Big lad, never hits rucks.
Yeah. I mean, I
James Haskell did hit rucks.
Yeah, I've said this before, but like Ruckley is just Zach Mercer with a collar on.
Yeah, he's spot on. Yeah. Look, now's not the time to talk about Ruckley, my man. Because a mascot we'd just grown attached to.
To talk
murdered.
About rugby.
Yeah. We've set the record now, probably taking it from last week or the week before, of the longest it's taken us to get onto the game.
Here's the thing. I'm quite happy with that.
Yeah, me too.
And here's the thing, right? France scored 70 points, but none of them feel very memorable.
Sure, yeah.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey everyone, I'm Craig Robinson, co-host of the Ways to Win podcast, alongside my good friend John Calipari. I've been on the go recently, Phoenix, Kansas City, Chicago. If you're like me and have a home but aren't always at home, you have an Airbnb. Hosting your home or a spare room is a very practical side hustle. If you live in a big game town, you can Airbnb your place for fans to stay in. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
So last point I have before kickoff is that Alain Laurier, the second row for France, is twerking during La Marseillaise.
Wow, that's a choice.
Yeah, yeah. Probably
I just
about,
thought they all looked very disinterested in general.
Yeah, probably about 25 years before twerking becomes a thing. So again, doing things ahead of time, he should make films. So the very first thing I notice in the game itself is quite early on, Marinus Grobler, the fly-off for Zimbabwe, lines up a shot at goal. And I laughed because, not because of anything to do with the kick itself or anything, right? But I paused the game there and I counted the amount of people I could see sitting down in the background in the stadium in Eden Park. I counted 13 people.
What?
So in that one shot.
In one. Okay, is that like
in one frame? Yeah.
How much of the stand can you see there?
Most of it.
Very empty. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But they do come onto this at half time, and we might as well spoil it now. That at half time, we see a lot of people walking alongside the touchline. And bear in mind, they've just gotten like onto the pitch. Like they're not walking around the perimeter. They're just walking across the sideline of the pitch. And Grant Nisbet says it's one of the great traditions at Eden Park when Auckland play, is that all the supporters swap what end of the ground they're sitting at so they can see Auckland score more tries. But they're doing it for France this time instead. So evidently, they were all off camera in the first half. And then suddenly, it fills up in the second half.
Oh, that's really interesting. Okay. That's a bizarre thing to do, but it actually makes sense in rugby, I guess.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And so the official attendance is listed as 4,000, but it looks like about 58.
Yeah, because they've all gone and stood by the goal.
Yeah, exactly, exactly.
Something. Someone DM'd me, and I forget, I should find the name, but I'm saying, so we mentioned before, Japan were offered one case of beer for a try.
Yes.
For a goal, they were mentioned.
Yeah.
Apparently, in the 70s and early 80s, it was kind of dying out by the time of this World Cup, there was a phrase in rugby, people would refer to a converted try as a goal.
Doubt it.
The full amount of points you can possibly score in one goal.
Doubt it. Doubt it. I reckon they just wanted them to kick penalties. That was it.
No, I mean, I agree. But also, what a bizarre thing to do.
Yeah, it is a stupid thing to do, isn't it?
I guess, actually, no, it ties back to the original, when the conversion was all the points you got.
Yeah, it does. So it does.
It is what you'd, you know.
So, oh, yeah, that does make sense, actually, because the try was the attempt at the conversion, wasn't it? And then the goal. Yeah, it makes sense. Yeah. But also, shut up.
Also, again, where it died out.
But also, thank you for writing in and telling us about that. And I really appreciate you listening. So I'm sorry to dismiss you. I actually really appreciate that. I just want to suit my narrative that that Steinlager were being idiots. Anyway, so France get pulled up on a completely bullshit call by Derek Bevan, the referee, really early on when he penalises Esteve for being offside when he is clear like 2 or 3 metres behind the kicker. And it pissed me off for about 3 minutes, despite the fact France score immediately like off the back of it. And it really annoyed me. It's just one of those things that happens in amateur rugby where clearly people say like, oh yeah, he's too fast. That means he must be offside.
Yeah.
Yeah. Annoying.
I wasn't really paying attention. I mean, I remember that happening. I just wasn't paying attention, so I wasn't angry about it.
Yeah, that's fair enough. But like straight away, Modan scores. So
here's the thing, right? I don't hate that as a way of getting through life. Just not paying attention to not being angry about anything.
Yeah.
And, you know, I don't really feel that way. And I am angry about a lot of world developments. But also, it helps, doesn't it?
Yeah, that's fair.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, it was just like, it was just shit, is my point.
Have you ever seen a more standout comparison in a foot race than Patrice Steve to Eric Barrett?
It's funny, isn't it? Yeah. Eric Barrett is basically the world's slowest winger.
Eric Barrett is terrible.
But hey, he was on the selection panel, so...
Yeah, we've mentioned him in every episode in Zimbabwe. Eric Barrett was one of the Zimbabwe selectors who then picked himself. And he looks about 50, like a geography teacher, and he plays like it too.
Yeah,
and all he does is trundle very slowly for 2 yards, see a tackler coming towards him, then punt it randomly. He's terrible. And it started to really set in this game and started to make me really angry looking at the Zimbabwe team, because I've kind of just gone like, oh, fun underdogs, whatever. But they are, throughout this entire match, so stupid. They are one of the stupidest rugby teams I've ever seen in my life.
Yeah. Right?
So I think Richard Sumba is fantastic. He's brilliant player, right?
Brilliant.
Andy Ferreira, the tennis instructor at fullback, I think is actually, he's got something about him, but he's dumb.
Like, he's shit. Like, he is absolutely shit. So basically every time he gets the ball, he just decides he's going to kick it entirely parallel with his waist to towards the touchline, right? So he effectively grubbers it just so the ball gets to touch and doesn't bother about making any distance, about beating anybody, about like actually trying to advance for his team at all. He is absolutely shit, mate. I don't have any idea why you're saying he's good. He can't even spin off his other hand.
I'm not saying he's good. I'm saying Andy Ferreira has a level of... I can see why if you're a coach, you go, there's something I can work with here, right? Which is... And same with Grobler, right? But both of them do not think about what they're doing at all.
No.
Both of them, their decision-making is so poor. Or like Ferreira, I think, is very like informed by a fear of contact. And Grobler just is... Just punts it because he likes doing it.
Yeah, he doesn't know what else to do.
Like, no.
There's a point where Ferreira kicks the ball straight out on the full and Grant Nisbet says, that's a good reply.
Yeah. What are you doing?
At a point where it's just like, Ferreira, why do you keep doing this? Because that's all he does.
So when you look at the Zimbabwe team, right? Richard Sumba is a really good player. Okay? Yeah. He's great.
Mark Hill,
the number eight, I think he's actually a very good player as well.
Yeah,
and like a standout number eight in this tournament as well, I think. Like
he's been really good. Carries really well.
Carries really hard. Carries strong.
And knows like, how to use his size as well.
Yeah.
Which is advantage.
Like he pops up to carry when they need someone to carry.
He does actually work quite hard, doesn't he?
Which doesn't really happen in this World Cup. Like, if a forward gets the ball, they take contact. Right. But you don't have the thing happening that happens a lot now where like the 10 is about to be smashed, they drop it off the number eight or something.
Yeah, yeah.
And Martin was very good at putting himself in positions where he'll take a disposable carry. And he'll make some ground off it. I think him and Sumba are a massive cut above the others.
100% agree.
The rest of them, really bad. And it's got more... It started to get to me in this game. Because it's not... As I said, it's not just that they're not good at rugby and they're amateurs and everything, right? But they're so stupid in everything they're doing that it started to really frustrate me. And when you start to look at the history of Zimbabwe rugby, right? And Richard Sumba was the first black player to ever play for Zimbabwe, a nation that is majority black, right?
Yes.
And they had this very built-up history of looking down on other races within the rugby team, being a team of the elite in Zimbabwe, you know, the rich white people. And the best player by such a margin, is the only player from outside their kind of very select club that they looked at, you know? They have a very, like, set boundaries of, well, we'll, you know, we'll pick from our whole, like...
Yeah.
You know, like, summer clubs and the teams that play there. And hence why we're picking a tennis instructor, the tennis pro from one of those summer clubs.
Alleged tennis pro.
Yeah. It feels so much like... feels like the worst of rugby union coming through in this team, right?
And yeah,
only brought home by the fact that their best player by such a margin is the kind of you know the guy that shatters the glass ceiling. Rugby in general, because you didn't have
because
Springbok at this time,
and that's it. He was the first in the history, wasn't he?
Yeah,
As you say, like
and like he's pre Chester Williams. He's you know he's like a genuine landmark player.
Yeah. And then, you know, he's in the, of course, he's in the IRB Hall of Fame, or the Wood Rugby Hall of Fame, for that as well as just genuinely being a world-class rugby player in a Zimbabwe team.
And it just, it started to get to me when I was looking at this club, people who seem massively up their own arse, especially Eric Barrett, who picked the bloody team, picked himself in it because he's that self-important. When they're so just caught up in themselves, they haven't looked at who the best player, you know, a lot of the most talented athletes, I'm sure they were producing at this time.
Yeah. Craig Brown played well in that first game. Doesn't play again in the World Cup.
Yeah.
Fly off.
And instead, it just feels very, like, incestuous. And yet they're so stupid. They don't understand the game at all. And all they do is they, you know, people talk about aimless kicking nowadays, but look at the bloody 1987 Zimbabwe team.
Ludicrous, isn't it?
They do is kick it aimlessly to the French backs, who then just run it back and score.
So, 2 points, right? There's one point where Ferreira passes to nobody twice. Like, he passes the ball and it hits the floor, then he picks it up and he passes it to the floor again. And that time it's picked up by a French player.
I'm sure I've just been very, very harsh on the Zimbabwe team, and I apologise for that. Like, I've really laid into it, but I was very tired in Birmingham, so can you blame me?
So no, the other thing is, really you're talking about the attitudes towards kicking. So I was really struck by the commentators' attitudes towards kicking, because they kept saying that Mesnel was kicking really poorly in this game, when actually he was thumping the ball miles downfield in the first half. And What they kept saying is that because he wasn't finding touch, he was kicking poorly, just failing to account for the fact that Zimbabwe were picking the ball up and kicking it out 2 metres further than where they caught it, and that France then have the ball 50 metres upfield from where they had it previously, and that's why it's good kicking. It's like, no, they don't need to get it into touch. Like, yeah. And it makes me wonder, like, is that why people hate kicking? Because they just don't understand it.
I think that's always been a part of it.
Yeah.
Don't understand it. People look at it in the same way they looked at this hit.
Yeah.
And it's the same thing about, like we were talking about with Adam last week, that because defence wasn't a part of the game then,
yes,
people don't view it as an exciting part of the game, which it is these days.
It is. It's brilliant. Yeah.
Same as kicking is an exciting part of the game, but it's not explained well. And again, my take, I'll keep going back to it, and I'll keep mentioning, but probably only seem to mention on this podcast, but is that they should be doing, it's not presented properly. We should be seeing kicking from behind the goal lines. And that should be an angle you have set everywhere ground where it's possible.
Yeah. I think that's a very valid point. There's definitely something in there. There's a point where Malcolm Jellicoe does the thing that I got really annoyed at Richard Harding for doing, where they have their best attacking chance of the game, just getting to the French 22. First phase of a scrum, he chips it to where France have a three-man backfield who mark the ball. Yeah.
Once it's covered really easily and they call the mark, I think it's, hey, Steve, who calls the mark.
Yes.
And the second time he puts it out in the full.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's that kind of like, hey, there's something really reluctant in the fact that they kick it rather than taking contact or even attempting passes often.
Yeah, yeah. Try and do something on first phase. Like,
yeah.
If I was Tim and I was the captain playing scrum half, like, I'd be ashamed of that.
Yeah. And there's, I know they talk about it at in the first half, about how they're clearly playing like a jittery game and they wanted to disrupt France by having as many set pieces as possible.
Yeah.
Just play 1987. Of course you're going to have lots of set pieces, but you know, they're trying to like almost keep the score down by keeping the ball in play time right down.
Sure, yeah.
Also, you're just surrendering them possession because so many kicks were unambitious.
Yeah, they were. They were. Again, I just don't think the concept of ambitious kicks were invented yet where they were by teams other than France and the All Blacks in this World Cup.
Yeah.
They're the only teams who have invented like ambitious kicking for a purpose. And I genuinely think the other 10 teams in this World Cup, 14 teams, whatever, I just don't think they realised yet that was, you know, that you kicked for a reason other than to just clear it or because you wanted to. But yeah, so with what you were just saying, there's a point where Graham Thorne on COCOMs says, Zimbabwe have some good four play lads there. So he goes from forwards to players to lads because he realises both of those first two things would be wrong. And so he says, yeah, they've got some good lads, which I don't doubt.
Yeah, I'm sure they've got some. I'm sure some of them are terrific. I'm sure Neville Klopper's.
Mr. Klopper's looking at you, good sir. Come on the podcast.
Where did you come from?
I was a bit Dan Lydiate, wasn't it?
It was very Dan Lydiate.
Yeah. So it's the first
impression, but I appreciate it.
Should we look at the first try? Which you don't have written in front of you.
I don't remember which one it is.
Yeah. So Maudin scores straight away on maybe his first cap. But yeah, he scores. It's just kind of like France do some good sort of a good kind of backline move, and then they offload to Maudin in the end, who scores it. And the reason why I'm so vague on that try is because he scores the same try again about 5 minutes later.
So I thought this was something really impressive about Radif Maudin, is that he is running proper support lines, but he is also about the quickest to whip away the ball we've seen in this World Cup.
That's an interesting point.
He is behind each tackle when it is made, which is actually quite rare. And it means he offloads for a couple of his two of his three tries.
Yeah,
And so he's there because he's invariably just stood behind whoever's tackled all the time.
So that second one where he gets the return ball from De Broca is really smart. Like, he runs a loop as a scrum half. Like,
there's at least 2 points where someone is tackled and when the ball is presented, before someone actually works over it, he goes and whips it away.
Mm.
Right? Which is novel now. That's something coaches are looking for now.
Sure,
And he was doing it a few times just through sheer speed and anticipation.
Yeah.
He really impressed me.
Yeah, no, I think he was very, very good. Yeah, and yeah, he scores the first two tries of the game, which is, a hell of an impression to make. Yeah, a good sort of first hit out in that first half of the game. So, France sort of have a couple of attacking opportunities. Like, there's Eric Bonneval on his sort of one real touch of the game, makes a really nice break and offload, and you think, like, oh, this is going to be very interesting if he doesn't get injured. Then, so they get turned over, right? And Eric Barrett himself goes for a long kick downfield, only to be shoulder charged by Carminati, the French blindside. And Derek Bevan just moonwalks 30 meters to the mark, and it's really impressive. Like, it's just seeing him basically run backwards for like so long and just thinking he's never going to stop, because he's obviously going to where the kick lands to give this shoulder charge penalty. But yeah, no, I just think it's funny. And
love
then
Derek's mustache, by the way.
Oh, Derek's just a glorious man. By the way, speaking of the officials, he had Clive Norling on touch, who was once again, for the second time this tournament, very clearly hungover. Like, he was like really reluctant to run, like with his touch flag. Like, his reaction times were slow. He was evidently very low on sleep. He was always either like breathing really heavily or just trying not to be noticed. He was very clearly hungover once again.
Maybe he was just really out of shape.
Maybe he was. It's a good point. Amateurism in that. But speaking of that, so again, going back to Thorne on the COCOMs, at one point he says, oh, these Zimbabweans, they don't give up. They're really tough men. It must be because they're all tobacco farmers.
Oh, of course.
the coach is going to be staying in New Zealand after this to help the New Zealand tobacco industry.
Wow. Okay. So I'd forgotten that was the backbone of the Zimbabwe team.
It's tobacco farmers.
It's all tobacco farmers. As I say, if they feel like a handful of sports clubs, it makes even more sense. It's even more incestuous, and they're all business partners together. And they all come out together, and then they bring Richard Sumpor as their little mate, who's obviously better than all the rest of them.
Yeah.
Forgotten. Okay. I wonder what influence it had on the New Zealand tobacco industry. Did it really take off from here and like cure modern marriage in New Zealand?
I hope so. But I mean, you hear the stories of like how much Jerry Collins smoked, for example, while he was in the All Blacks team. And you wonder if unnamed Zimbabwe coach maybe helped his career along the way. Brian Murphy, is that his name?
Brian Murphy is his name.
Yeah. So don't mind me just Googling Brian Murphy tobacco right now.
Ah ha ha. Now we're talking.
Have you just found instantly Brian Murphy's tobacco business? I looked at the LinkedIn page, but it wasn't the right guy.
So Brian Murphy, the coach of Zimbabwe at this World Cup.
Okay. Right?
Was a cricket prodigy.
Interesting. This is why I leave you to do the research.
He was huge cricket boy. He played, but then he played rugby for the first time for Rhodesia, as it was at the time, in 1969, which was very nice.
Nice.
And yeah, continued playing on rugby, but also balanced it alongside cricket. It was very much a dual thing. Cricket, he went on to play for the World 11, and he's very much seen as a kind of dual code person.
Okay.
He was probably better at cricket, but he focused more on rugby because he liked it.
Sure.
He went on to coach Zimbabwe, as they were then, afterwards. And his son went on to play cricket for Zimbabwe afterwards. And, yep, was a professional cricket player in the early noughties. This is what I can find so far. Okay, yes.
Hit me.
Brian Murphy, right, was a high up in a company called Castle Lee, right?
Right.
Who were a tobacco company in Zimbabwe.
Right.
Okay.
I'm following so far.
They went on by 1993 to be the fifth biggest tobacco company in the world.
All started by this fella.
He was very high up in it. He was high up. He wasn't started it, but he was a high up executive.
Interesting. So presumably he did have a big impact on the New Zealand tobacco industry.
Yep. And he then coached rugby on the side. That was just his day job. They were sold in the 90s for $100 million.
Oh my God.
Is a very significant portion of all the money in the world.
It is. We've got an update on all the money in the world. Because look, we know where it is circa now.
Mm-hmm.
But we've been piecing together where it was in 1987. All the money in the world belonged to Zimbabwe's very own Brian Murphy.
However, right, we've also got an addition to the Christian Raducanu spy movie.
No!
Because, right, so Brian Murphy was a top executive. He was like, I think he was like fourth in command or that sort of tier. Like he was, you know, very high up in this company. But the top of the company, right, was John Brendenkamp,
okay,
who was also former captain of the Rhodesia rugby team and captain Brian Murphy during his caps, right?
Hello.
This was where they met, and they then started this tobacco business. Brendan Camp was the head of the business. He was the big boy, the natural leader, the top dog, right?
Yeah, big fella.
Yeah.
They the tallest man.
They imported stuff through Belgium, Antwerp, to be particular. Mm-hmm. Yeah, huge deal in tobacco trading industry, and produce a lot of the tobacco for across Africa and Brazil and the Netherlands.
Okay, okay.
As well as Belgium, which were huge in all of those countries.
Okay, okay.
However, to use Brian Murphy's own words, right, of Brendan Camp, he said in 1996, he's always been an arms dealer. So Brendan Camp himself has denied this, but reportedly he was also a huge arms dealer, right? He would sell weapons, including...
What?
Including, so this former... This is a hell of a rabbit hole to have fallen down. Yeah. Made a throwaway joke to something that came up on commentary. But he also, right, reportedly, apparently, as uncovered in the early noughties, sold anti-aircraft guns to Iraq for the Iraq War.
Holy fuck.
And landmines to Iran for the Iran-Iraq Wars in the 1980s.
Fuck my head.
Sure, okay. I'm a bit far away, but sure, we can get that range. He sold, ground attack aircraft to Rhodesian Air Force. And as I understand it from reading a couple of articles here, right? And I've been doing this, we had like a minute's pause whilst I read this, and I've read a lot while we're on air.
And look, you've kept a straight face.
As I understand this, this is real, right?
Mm-hmm.
John Brendan Camp, former Rhodesia rugby captain.
Yeah.
And his teammate, Brian Murphy, started
former
tobacco business together, right?
Yeah.
Brian Murphy ran the kind of respectable side of the business, was very high up in the company.
The respectable
which
side.
Went on to become the fifth biggest tobacco company in the world. Gained them all the money in the world.
Yes.
Right? Meanwhile, his former teammate and now business partner was in the background selling weapons to Iraq.
There's something else that I think we need to uncover here. Because, look, I think it's important that what this is it's a history podcast, is it not? We're talking about past events. And as well, while we're here, we're piecing them together. So you mentioned there, you think this could be in some way linked to the Christian Raducanu inside job that's going on, right? That's a possibility.
It's all spy movie stuff, isn't it? Like,
that's what I'm saying.
John Brendan Camp, as of 2009, had 18 businesses blacklisted by the EU.
Jesus fucking nice. I mean, Christ.
69. At the time of this article I'm reading, he was 68, so you're
close. But, right,
yeah.
So, I want you to cast your mind back to, and this is some proper like lawyer shit we're doing. I want you to cast your mind back. Do you have something else to say before we do this?
No, just how do we keep doing this? How do we keep falling down more and more impressive stories in this World Cup?
Cast your mind back a few episodes ago when you told me a story about Superboot, where there was the Fijian football match and the physio ran on and chased the referee with, and I quote, a weapon.
Where did
he get said weapon from, I wonder? Did he give money in exchange for the weapon?
Could I tell you something else that just come up? This is a coincidence, right? But the quote from the European Commission for Development and Humanitarian Aid, right?
Okay.
Which referred to him as having taken targeted measures against individuals, very much spoke out against him. The name of the guy quoted is John Clancy, like the former referee.
You mean George Clancy?
I'm mixing up John Clancy.
John Clancy was...
Wasn't
John Clancy a video game?
John Clancy's been... No, Tom Clancy's Splinter Cell.
Oh, Tom Clancy. Ah, never mind.
He's an author.
We were both thinking of different unrelated people.
George Clancy and John, who at the same time had like tall...
John, of course.
Silver hair. Irish referee as well. John Murphy? Not John Murphy. John something.
Right. Sure.
I'm glad I've started to forget names of old referees.
Are you thinking of Alan Lewis?
No. Okay. No. It might have been Johnny.
No.
Played for Munster, I think, in his day, and then...
Don't know, to be honest. But...
Jesus Christ, man.
Tobacco, weapons, money, all of these controversial items that probably don't fit into the greatest will for good in the world, what, amateurism.
What was bloody Steven Spielberg doing, wasting his time making Empire of the Sun this year?
Honestly, man, he should have just watched back the entirety of the 1987 World Cup instead. He'd have had so many sick ideas.
I mean, like, all this rugby is terrible.
Yeah, yeah, oh, yeah.
Some of the
yeah.
rabbit holes spiralling off from this thing, man. Like, we haven't even talked about Richard Simba's brother.
Richard Simba has a brother?
I did some research into Richard Simba's brother earlier, right?
You were looking at the wrong guy.
So, Richard Simba, he had a brother, right, who also played for Zimbabwe.
Mm-hmm.
His name was Kennedy Simba, mm-hmm. right? Also won 7 caps, I think, for Zimbabwe as a player.
Yeah.
Okay. Played a few games for Bath as well, started the professional era, played a lot in the Currie Cup, and was known as the King of Bloemfontein. And, yeah, however, he was, beyond that, right, has then had one of those players, right, that sometimes happen, where they had a pretty modest rugby career, but they managed to, off the back of it, launch a really good post-game career.
Interesting.
Really dwarfs it, right? So not only is he still a pundit for a lot of the kind of cross-African coverage nowadays.
That's cool.
Like, cover the 2019 World Cup, and it's like season round list and so on.
That's very cool.
Not only has he written a book on rugby, not only did he run a TV show, present a TV show called Try Time TV.
Nice, I like it.
I don't know anything about, but like...
Sounds good, I'd watch that.
Yeah. He also is a music artist.
Is he now?
And he released an album... which you can't find anywhere.
Oh my God, wow.
I looked for so long to find Tryline ETV, it's called, this TV show. His album, which I spent so long trying to find today when I came across this. This was the thing I spent a lot of my time.
Because really we needed something for the Zimbabwean leaving party later on.
That's what I really wanted. I wanted this to be played over the leaving party. I couldn't find anything. It's called Stories of the N1, his album. I believe it was released in like 2009. No, 2011. So it could tie into the previous one.
I've got until we reach the leaving party to think of a punchline.
And
I could play like Lana Del Rey's first album that got released when it flopped, and then you know they made a famous after that, something like that.
I mean, he said he always wanted to be a magician, but he also loved rugby. He enjoys playing a number of instruments, including the silver flute, percussions, and acoustic guitar.
I'd love to listen to Kennedy Simba's album.
At the time of the one interview he did to promote this album, was working on a documentary, and I'm going to read you word for word this, right? It was called The Bok Who Got Away.
Is that what the album was called? The documentary?
No, the documentary. The album's called Stories of the N1.
Oh yeah, you said that.
The documentary was called The Bok That Got Away, which is a compilation of his inspiring rugby story.
Okay.
Where he calls himself the Bok That Got Away.
And he also calls himself inspiring.
Yep, he says basically he should have played for the Springboks, but he won a few games for caps in Zimbabwe instead.
I mean,
a hell of a character.
He does. Again, I respect the confidence.
And yeah, he also accepted the place in the World Rugby Hall of Fame on behalf of Richard Simba.
Oh, did he? Oh, yeah, I like that. You know, I like that. I bet he was pissed he wasn't nominated.
Well, yeah. Of course, you know, his brother dies in a...
Yeah.
Car crash.
Yeah, yeah.
Traffic collision.
Yes.
Years after this. But yes. So. Do you want to talk about the second half?
I mean, very quickly, there's a very violent incident in the first half.
Yeah, of course there is.
Where Rodriguez, France's 8, just kills Mark Neal in the air. Like he leaps to take a line out and he flips him onto his neck, which is...
Yeah, it's horrible.
Quite absurd. Yeah, and then Neil really struggles for the rest of the game until he eventually has to go off, which is a shame because he was Zimbabwe's best player in this game.
Grant Nisbet says, oh, he'll walk a bit gingerly for a couple of minutes, but it'll be fine.
Yeah.
Grant Nisbet has a really good game. I really enjoyed his company.
Me too. Again, like I think so far in this 87 series, I have generally enjoyed Grant Nisbet a lot.
Yeah.
Credit where it's due. So there's a point where France are about to score their third try and they offload to Modan who drops it, which is very clear joke avoidance. So France score their third and then their last try the first half, which is scored by De Broca, the captain, from what can only be described as a move called a dummy flying wedge.
Yes.
Where they send seven out of eight forwards charging, and the Zimbabweans go, shit, should we stop them? Should we all clamp over there to stop them? And the scrum half very cleverly taps it and gives it to the one player they're not looking at.
It's really good. I enjoyed a tap move that is incredibly simple.
Mm, yeah. I also love that because they run this twice in the game. And spoiler alert, they score the exact... I think it's Rodriguez scores the exact same try doing the same thing.
Yeah,
Where... and for both tries, so Mordan, obviously playing scrum off, is the one who taps the ball. And he slaps both of his knees to like signal for the pack to start charging, which I really like. It's like a really Western approach to playing scrum off.
It is very old school, isn't it?
It's
very Wild West.
I love it. Yeah. I love it. It's brilliant. Half time. So the thing is, I was about to throw to you, but you got no notes.
No notes. I remember you can hear the French talking in French. I tried to listen on Team Talk, but I couldn't get any of it.
No.
Oh, at one point, you can hear Zimbabwe do their lineout call, and they just call like 1-3-7. They throw it to one.
Yeah, I noticed that one.
It's the first number they say. It's where they're throwing.
It's the same approach as the USA.
They are just as stupid as I thought they were.
Yeah. Oh man, yeah. Even counting, you can't rely on people to do well at this level. So Philip Seller goes off injured. So yes. They completely reshuffle their back line. So they bring on Guy Laporte, move Mesnel to fullback, move Cambo Ribeiro to the wing, and Marc-André to the centre. Simple. So yes, Seller's off. And then basically the first thing that happens is you think like, oh my God, France are going to go to shit. Because like I had written down like multiple times when Seller was on, like, lads, you're allowed to tackle him. Like every time Seller got the ball, he was just tearing through them.
Yeah. Sometimes without looking like he was trying.
Yeah. He never sprinted when he was on the pitch.
First actually really outpaces someone and chips him.
Oh, of course, yeah.
And then after that, he just kind of goes into jogging. It's like he works out his level after his first touch.
He really isn't trying, but you're right. He's just completely tearing through every time. But yeah, he goes off, and then it's like, oh my God, France are going to go to shit. Because the first thing that happens is Simba gets an intercept and looks like he's going to go all the way. But he's very clearly in lots of pain. So he makes it about 50 metres, I think, which is still a good haul.
About the 22, yeah.
Yeah, from having caught it in the opposition 22, bear in mind as well, because it's the world's most telegraphed pass from Modan, who literally waits for him to stand in the path, like the 9-10 channel, and just throws it to him. But yeah, Simba really looks in such discomfort. Me too, yeah. I was really hoping he would score it, because like it was a really good read. And he still showed good gas, just like he just was so uncomfortable with his injury.
Yeah, I mean, he's really struggling to run. And Camabero does the most bizarre tackle I've ever seen on him.
Yeah.
And he matches up with him. And he then just kind of like sweeps his legs from under him. Like, because he's running back, instead of doing like the dive at his legs or anything, he kind of goes in like, as though he's going to tackle him normally, because they're both going in the same direction, the momentum's going in the same direction. Kind of swoops him up over his shoulder so that his kind of legs tilt out from under
him. Yeah, and just drags his boot.
Yeah. It's really interesting, but also strangely effective.
It is.
A really good offloader as it's happening as well.
He does,
It's a discombobulating tackle.
Yeah. But yeah, no, that was a shame. And Grant Nisbet does point out in the commentary as well, like he's very clearly feeling his injury.
Yeah.
And that's really slowing him down. And like, we might as well get to it now. Richard Simba gets another intercept later on.
Okay,
and goes to dive for the corner and is sadly just in touch.
Richard Simba is brilliant at everything except diving.
Yes, I agree. I think really his choice of dive was really poor there. That what he wants to do, and
there's about eight ways he could have attempted to finish that try.
That's it.
Right. And I think six of them would have guaranteed him a score. And he goes to one of the two that wouldn't.
Agree. Because the commentary point out that he probably should cut inside. That's probably the play to go for. I don't think he's necessarily wrong to go on the outside, but he has to get low, doesn't he?
Yeah.
He has to slide along the floor.
Either get low or stay very upright and just dock the ball down.
Yeah.
Instead, back he goes strength. For like a huge dive.
Yeah.
And obviously, touching the corner flag was out at the time. And also, his foot does just touch the white wasp.
Yeah.
Down.
So in a way, he's unlucky. But And also, you do wonder if he was protecting his shoulder by not charging into him.
That's true.
Possibly a part of it. But
it does feel very...
It's opportunity blown. He should have scored that. As a world-class player, he should have scored that. And he was. Yeah.
He is tied as Zimbabwe's all-time top World Cup try scorer. And that would have put him clear on it.
Yeah, of course. I mean, It's ironic that the one he doesn't score is the one where he doesn't get injured.
Yes.
Yeah, he comes up unscathed from that. So yes, Neil goes off injured, as mentioned earlier. And Zimbabwe have just been utterly decimated. Like, they have constantly got their best players always going down injured, like, throughout the game. And then...
But bloody Eric Barrett's okay.
Some bullshit happens, right? Where they've made their two subs, so they have to go down to 14 men.
Oh, of course, right.
So, so Mark Neal goes off about 5 minutes into the second half, and they have to play the rest of the game with 14. So they're one light in the pack, which they were struggling with enough as it was, but just about retaining their own ball. Mm. And so it becomes a completely non-contest for the rest of the game.
They have one scrum right before they go down, right before Neal goes off.
Yeah.
Where they almost shove France off the ball, having really struggled with the scrum all day. Yeah. Like, Serbia's generally been a bit of a difficulty for them.
Yeah.
And they have one, but they really put it together and they look on top. And then suddenly, as you say, they go down and...
And that's it. Like, they just figured out how to, even if they're going backwards, like, retain the ball and make something good or something at least functional out of bad ball.
Yeah.
And then suddenly they lose their number eight and their most experienced forward. And they're just really struggling at that point.
How disproportionately angry I got earlier.
Yes.
I do feel for them a bit in this last...
Massively. They've been utterly decimated.
They have a lot against them, and it's been a very long World Cup. And just because they've played like idiots doesn't mean they deserve to be kind of just torn apart in the way they are and punished for it.
Yeah, yeah. There's a point on commentary where it says, we're seeing lots of injuries in this World Cup. It might be because the standard of rugby is higher than anything we've ever seen before. So, oh my God, like, this is notably higher than they've ever seen before.
Do they just mean Zimbabwe have seen before?
I hope so.
Though we are seeing a lot from all angles. Yeah, okay.
So, as soon as Neil goes off and they're down to 14, the first thing I have written down in my notes is Xavi just pisses straight through them, easy try.
Xavi has a moment where he kind of flicks a switch and just becomes... Well, I think we talked about Patrice Lebon doing the same thing of just like suddenly becoming class.
Yeah, yeah.
He just kind of like, he hits a brilliant line and then just does like, I'm just going this one. I've got this one.
Yeah, yeah.
And then a few minutes later pops up on the end and like, has another like, I've got this one.
That's
and
it. So,
right after each other.
This is the first time, right, I've ever like had a note in my, written in here. And then I've just written times two rather than bothering to write out again. Because he just scores the same try twice.
But from further out. Like the first one's in 22, the second one's like halfway.
Like he takes a switch and then just pisses through them. That's the only way I can describe it. Steps around a couple of people, weak tackles because they're having to work a bit harder. And that's it. Like,
that's it.
Scores, yeah. And then as soon as he gets past two again after scoring those two tries, he drops it. More jug avoidance. Modon scores a hat-trick.
Yep. He has a really good second half. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, Modon goes completes a hat-trick, pops up on the end of its forwards offloading and that, isn't it?
There's Mesnel does a chip and offloads to him one-handed, which is really, really nice try. And it looks like Mesnel's going to go the whole way. Turns out he's quite fast, so you can see why they've maybe seen him as a winger.
But slightly off the wing, yeah.
Yeah.
Camembero gets three tries. I didn't notice any of them. Well, no, you know, I did.
I noticed two of them.
Yeah.
I don't know where he gets
the last one, he turns up and they're like, it's his hat-trick. And you're like, is it? Is it?
So his first one is just kind of like a simple 8-9-14 move down the blind side.
Mm.
And then this is where things start to get interesting, and I'll tell you why in a minute. But Estev then scores a try like straight away, like straight from the kickoff. And the way I've described it is that France just piss about from the kickoff. They throw eight passes. Modan touches the ball three times in that movement. And then they do a little break down the short side and then find a load of space in midfield. De Borca has the ball and offloads to the backs, who then have a bit of magic to finish it off with Estev finishing it in the corner as the quickest man on the field, right? Mm. And
it is lovely.
It's very, very nice. It's one of the best tries of the tournament so far. I've not done it justice.
And, you know, look, I don't know if you noticed this. In the corner of the pitch, they have a car that says, try of the tournament.
I didn't see that.
I think he's got a sponsor's name as well. It's got like a sponsor's logo and I couldn't read the sponsor.
Right, yeah.
But I believe that is a card being given away to whoever wins try the tournament and just have it parked in the corner of the pitch.
In that case, I mean, fair play to Denis Xavier throwing that last pass for Estef to score it because it's a brilliant try. But then again, There was no dogs on the field, so they're not going to win try that. No, it's not the same, are they? But what is then interesting is, so that Cambero try that I just mentioned, the one with the blind side, that try is scored, right? Where on the video on YouTube, there are 25 minutes left of the game.
Okay.
What I didn't realise is that with 25 minutes left in this game of rugby, I would only witness 4 more tackles in the whole game.
What?
So, the next tackle is made 11 minutes later.
You're kidding. It felt like that.
I'm not kidding. So, I have this written down. So, Cambero scores that try. Estev then scores that try. And then I have written in my notes, oh, superb tennis! Because Ferreira hits the line brilliantly, does a little nice arc on the outside, does the World Cup's most gorgeous inside flick out the back of his hand to set up Pete Colback to score an amazing try on first phase.
This is the thing I was saying about him having the raw materials. Like, you can look at that guy, Andy Ferreira, and go like, oh, there's a player there. There's a
it was player. Class!
How he tear it up in the Zimbabwe leagues. But, you know, in the, like, in the bloody tobacco farming leagues, you know, the tobacco farming divisions, I can see where he'd absolutely tear it up. But also, he looks out of his depth here. But every now and again, you get a flash of it like that.
Yeah. It was great. And, like, yeah, Colback's line predicted it really, really well. And, like, you look from the first angle, you assume it's just knocked loose out of his hand. Mm. But you look at the replay, like, no, he really delicately offloads the ball out the just back, like, of his hand.
Flicks out of the back of his hand, yeah.
Fantastic. And players can't do that in this World Cup. I think that's the first time I've seen someone successfully do that for it to lead to a try.
I guess so, yeah.
It's unbelievable. It's
Andy
such a great piece of
skill.
Yeah, exactly. Tennis Someone's prodigy. So, yeah, after that, so Zimbabwe then drop the kickoff, and France then just go wide to Cambero, who scores, like, straight from the kickoff, it's dropped, and they just pass the ball as wide as they can, and then they just draw and give. You know, the sort of try that Jiffy thinks is possible in every phase. And, yeah, Cambero scores in the corner.
Yeah.
So,
it seems simple, doesn't it? Like, it was really like, oh, they've actually scored this, right?
Yeah. Just on first phase, once again. Then, straight from the kickoff, France are penalised for obstruction in open play. Zimbabwe have it between the posts, and they go, you know what, let's just go for goal.
I don't know how I feel about that decision.
I think it's just a laugh, because they know what their position they're in.
Yeah,
they
are like 50-odd points down at this point. Mm.
And they're not going to score, are they? They're going to kick it away.
10 metres out. But they've just had Andy Ferreira do the most gorgeous thing you've ever seen in your life.
It is true. And just suddenly turn into Sonny Bill.
Yeah.
So they kick for goal. And then, about 5 minutes later, a tackle is made.
Mm.
So, the last time a tackle was made, the score was 40-3. By the time this next tag was made, the score was 56-12.
Well, that does explain it.
So, in the non-tackle period, the score was 16-12 to France.
That's a full match.
Yeah.
That's a full match, 69.
Nice.
Yeah. No, it was 9 rather than 12. I wasn't making a joke, sorry.
You're right. But yes, still. So, yeah, it was just over 11 minutes between tackles being made. And eventually it happens. And, like, yeah, France have scored 3 tries and Zimbabwe have scored 1 in that time. Rodriguez then scores a pushover try from a resulting scrum after 2 tackles have been made consecutively to make it 62-10. And then the commentators just become obsessed with Cambero potentially breaking his record. Yeah.
They suddenly start talking about nothing else. In the way we had a lot of with Hastings, the previous match.
Mm.
But even more so here, I think they're talking about nothing else.
They literally say, like, as France start running the ball from it, because every single kickoff, Zimbabwe just kick it into the France end goal and they run it out every time. They don't force it for the dropout and they never learn from it. But yeah, so Grant Nisbet literally says, like, could France now spark the try that will lead to Cambero converting it? Which is not the way around you usually do it. But...
No.
And then France nearly go the length. There's Cambero himself go through a little chip kick over the top of Ferreira. Regathers the ball, does a brilliant offload. And France, I think, knock it on just short. Nearly go the length, as I say. Then France set for a scrum. And there's a couple of things here. I think one thing that's important, and I guess this could be a potential man of the match or dick of the day qualifier is that De Borca takes water from the Zimbabwe medic.
Huh.
The Zimbabwe medic is tending to a player who's down on the floor, and De Borca says, "Can I have your water?" And the guy's just kind of hesitant, and he just takes it off him and starts drinking it.
Some great shit housing there.
It's brilliant. I think it qualifies him more for man of the match than dick of the day, but especially after having played a good game. But France then fix the record by from this scrum five, just obviously attacking the blind side, just so Canberra and Berra can get his hat trick and dive in the corner.
Crucially, he gets to break the record, but not his dad's record, because they make sure he has to take it in the corner.
Yes. So yeah, he dives in the corner, misses his own kick.
What's he going to do?
Yeah. Other than get another shot at it later on, because we're on to the last try of the game now. We have whizzed through these. So,
2 hours.
But we've not spoken about the game. So Laporte, it is who scores the last try, where Mesnel makes a really nice break and offload, where it looks like Mesnel's going to go the whole way, has the ball in one hand the entire time. He's described as looking a bit chunky on the commentary and then delivers, nice one-handed offload, and Laporte just canters in, but not near enough to the posts for Canberra and Barrow to break his dad's record.
Which means we have a second consecutive world record on the podcast.
Does
it mean you are going to ignore it for a second consecutive week as we pick our man of the match?
Genuinely, I spent the entire second half really hoping he doesn't break the record, because I have genuinely been really pissed off at myself for that man of the match thing last week. Why did I not just pick the player who was obviously the best on the pitch? Why did I go like, oh yeah, let's pick somebody else just because I want to be different from these guys, even though I'm going first? Like, genuinely, I've lost sleep over that. And I tweeted about this the other day. What stupid fucking thing. I write about rugby. Like, if somebody did that on the television, I'd be like, oh, this guy's a fucking idiot. Get him off the telly. Like, honestly, man, I'm so annoyed at myself. So I spent the whole time just thinking, like, I really hope Karen Barabero doesn't get that record, because, like, I had written down as my man of the match Mo Dan, because he scored a hat-trick and played brilliantly all game round. And Canberra and Barrow didn't do much in the first half, did fucking loads in the second. So part of me wants to give man of the match to Gavin Hastings right now. But realistically, just to piss my past self off, my man of the match is Canberra and Barrow.
Okay. It's just as well that my man of the match is Rodif Modin, the scrum
Thank
half,
God.
Who would be my man of the match even if he didn't score his tries.
Sure. He was brilliant.
The best player on the pitch.
This is my redemption arc.
Link play, his general scrum halfiness.
Yeah. Looked like open play was good, wasn't he? Yeah.
Generally open play, turning up, keeping things going, keeping fantasy continuity really high. I don't know how he doesn't win another cap after this. I think it's fantastic. He stood out.
Do you not win another cap?
He doesn't win another cap.
So he has the same legacy as Neville Cloppers.
Same legacy as Neville.
He scored a hat trick on his only cap in the World Cup.
Actually, the name of his autobiography, The Legacy of Neville Cloppers. Yep, this is it for a deep one.
That's obscene.
Yep. Scores a hat trick, is the best player on the pitch, then disappears forever.
That's stupid. Why would you do that? He was the best player.
France.
Oh my God, that's hilarious. And just genuinely terrible.
Bezier comes back in, and that's us. That's it, done. That's his career.
Well, you've managed to find a way to make me regret my man of the match choice still, but no, I'm going to stick with it because them's the rules, apparently.
Yeah. Went on to play for another 4 years for Brief, where he played over 200 games.
And I bet he was amazing.
Yeah, but only one cap.
Potentially two if we're counting that USA one.
That's true.
But that's insane. Like, unless you're Craig Gilroy, your last cap should never end with scoring a hat-trick and then just getting dropped into the ether forever. Yeah, that's obscene. And, that is.
Players that were dropped rather than retiring after a hat-trick happened to be the last game. They said they're retiring in advance. They happened to go hat trick in the final game, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
Shane Williams style. Who didn't score a hat trick, but you know what I mean. Anyway, dick of the day.
So I had written down Canberra and Barrow if he doesn't get the record. I wrote that down like 60 minutes in. And also, at the end of the game, a kid asks him for his autograph and he just shakes his head. which is pretty dickish, but not going to give it to him. I don't know. I have written down Modan. I suppose that's probably for his jug avoidance. And Ferreira for... There's a point where Andy Ferreira tries to keep the ball in play. And Grant Nisbet points out, so Andy Ferreira tried to keep the ball in play, but he got the wrong line. So he was stood on the 5 meters line rather than the touch line and jumps to like keep the ball in play and bats it inwards, but it's already still in play, so it's fine. So
yes.
It has to be him. It has to be him. I wanted to give it to whatever dickhead killed Monsieur Le Drop, but that's an eternal dick of the day. I can, yeah. Once we find out who it is, he's dick of the day, but it's Andy Ferreira. It's the last game I'm likely to see him play in, so I think it's got to be him.
Speaking of last game I'm likely to see him play in, my dick of the day could never be anyone other than the one, the only, Eric Barrett. For A, picking himself in the team, which is a dickhead move, but B, for picking this god-awful team.
Yeah, not only picked himself, but he picked the rest of them as well.
Exactly.
He should have just picked Simba and Neil to do it by themselves. Simba and Neil's a strange Lion King, like, lion.
He picked, yeah, Simba, who was visibly injured.
Yeah.
Like, you can glance at him and know he's injured.
And yet he was the one who made the most sense to pick.
Yep. And he only gave Neville Cloppers one game.
Yeah, exactly. Should have picked him more, man. Oh, that's such an apt selection. Though? What?
Can I give you some awful news? You know when you said this is the last time you see Andy Ferreira play?
Go on.
He goes on to play again in the 1991 Rugby World Cup.
Fuck off.
He retires after the 91
World Cup. Oh, no.
So, we haven't seen the back of him now.
Oh. But the thing is, it's going to be in like 3 years' time we get to that World Cup. And you should be like, oh, remember this guy? He was terrible, the tennis player.
I'm excited for it. But in the meantime, we say Sara Visnakana Kanaka. Sara Kamananaka. I'm really sorry. That's horrible. We say goodbye to Zimbabwe. So, this is the last we'll see of Zimbabwe in this World Cup. They do play again in the 1991 World Cup, which is the only time they ever qualify again. They, of course, were only really put in this World Cup so that they could give South Africans someone to cheer for.
Yeah. Look, I enjoyed them certainly in the first game. I think I enjoyed them as a novelty generally, to be honest, even though they weren't that good.
I've been very harsh on them, I think, in this game. And I think a large part of that is because it was a handful of clubs picking their own, you know?
Sure.
And it feels very rugby union.
Clicky.
In the
I get that.
We are a few about it. And I really hope by 91, the squad makeup has changed a lot and is far more representative of Zimbabwe.
100%.
And is, tapping into the best athletes they have as well.
Yeah. I think in terms of picking...
Nowadays, well, we see it in like modern Zimbabwe teams that are very different.
Yeah, definitely.
To this team we're seeing here.
I think in terms of picking a player of the tournament for them, it's bizarre because he played one game at full fitness, but Richard Simba was a cut above the rest of them.
Absolutely.
I just think it's difficult. I mean, Mark Neal, as I say, is the other one who really stands out, who was genuinely very good and consistent throughout the games they played. So, yeah, it's between those two, and I imagine you're in full agreement.
I completely agreed on those two, and Richard Simba, to me, stands out as the best player in the Zimbabwe team. And it's worthy of gold. It's maybe the best player Zimbabwe's ever produced. And it's hard to argue with that.
100%. 100%. By the way, what music are we listening to?
This is Zimbabwe by Bob Marley.
Nice. Dick of the tournament is Andy Ferreira for me.
Eric Barrett again. It's got to be Eric bloody Barrett.
Yeah,
Or bloody Brian Murphy for not putting Neville Cloppers in.
It's true. Look, I know that we haven't given Neville Cloppers Zimbabwe and play the tournament because he only played one game, right? But when it comes to the overall one, he is not ruled out.
He's not ruled out one bit. So, farewell to Zimbabwe. France move on to the quarterfinals where they'll play Fiji. And we will, next week, move on to Wales' game against Canada where they can book their place in the quarterfinal. Or can Canada do it? No, Wales win. I'm sorry.
I am gutted for the bear.
Yep. We have just five games of the pool stage left. We're almost there. We're almost into the knockouts.
Yeah.
And that also means we're almost back to Super Boot. So that's the real
yes! thing. Yes! Because that's who France are going to play against. So Serge Blanco is about to get his ass handed to him.
So we'll see you then for more rugby. Thank you for listening to this. Congratulations on getting the whole way through.
Yeah.
We'll see you very, very soon. And hopefully I'll see you in Birmingham News 3 on my way back when I'm probably watching bloody England against the USA for the following game.
Yeah. I'll see you next on your birthday.
I guess. Bye.
Bye.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.